See you tonight, 1 Corinthians chapter 10. 1 Corinthians chapter 10. We're going to look at the first 13 verses. It tells a story. It's very easy to follow. In fact, it charts our outline for us, but I will have some slides so that you can follow my points. 1 Corinthians chapter 10. So the Apostle Paul writes to Christians at the city of Corinth, "Moreover, brethren, I do not want you to be unaware that all our fathers were under the cloud, all passed through the sea, all were baptized into Moses in the cloud and in the sea, and all ate, verse 3, the same spiritual food, and all drank the same spiritual drink, for they all drank of that spiritual rock that followed them, and that rock was Christ. But most of them, God was not well pleased. With most of them, God was not well pleased. For their bodies were scattered in the wilderness. Now these became our examples to the intent that we should not lust after evil things as they also lusted. And do not become idolaters as some of them, as it is written, the people sat down to eat and drink and rose up to play. Nor let us commit sexual immorality as some of them did. And in one day 23,000 fell. Nor let us tempt Christ, as some of them also tempted, and were destroyed by serpents. Nor complain, as some of them also complained, and were destroyed by the destroyer. Now all these things happened to them as examples, and they were written for our admonition, upon whom the ends of the ages have come. Therefore, hence the title of the sermon, let him who thinks he stands take heed, lest he fall. No temptation has overtaken you, except such as is common to man, but God is faithful, who will not allow you to be tempted beyond what you are able, but with the temptation will also make the way of escape that you may be able to bear it." So here we see this. The starting verse says, "I do not want you to be unaware." So talking to Christians, he says, this is a possibility, and this is something that you'd better pay attention to. In fact, if you move forward and you are not aware of this, then he says, you're going to fall. You're going to fail. So he says, I'm giving you a heads up in that sense. It's a heads up that you are going to be tempted to leave the Lord. And so, yes, the Israelites were on a spiritual journey. The fact that is established that they were on their walk has to be proven. It has to be proven because some have said this, that if you become a Christian, that you cannot become an un-Christian, okay? In other words, once you become a Christian, you're guaranteed to always be a Christian. No matter what comes, you're always going to be a Christian. We call that doctrine once saved, always saved. I don't know if you've heard that expression, but it's once saved, always saved. But those who believe that will sometimes say, well, look at that person. They are not behaving as a Christian, and they, you know, live like the devil, but they're still going to be saved. This passage is going to help us understand that. But it's not just written for us to win an argument. Yes, you can fall. It's written for us to take to heart. It's written for us to finish our journey. What I want you to see is how many times the word spiritual is used in those first three verses. When he says, for instance, in verse 1, "Moreover, brethren, I do not want you to be unaware that all our fathers were under the cloud, all passed through the sea, and all were baptized into Moses in the cloud and in the sea. And all ate the same spiritual food, and all drank the same spiritual drink, for they drank of that spiritual rock that followed them, and that rock was Christ." So you had spiritual food, spiritual drink, you had a spiritual rock, okay? That's a lot of spiritual things. This emphasis on the word spiritual might be surprising, because back then, most people thought that when you followed God through Moses, everything was physical. You had a physical nation, you had a physical promised land. You crossed a physical Red Sea in order that you get, you know, on your way to the promised land. Everything about that walk seemingly was physical, but he says, no, actually it was a spiritual walk all along. The word spiritual here could be in contrast with formerly in this letter. He says that these brethren were carnal. They were a carnal mindset. That meant that they basically liked things that appealed to the flesh. They liked a church that made them feel better about themselves. They liked a church that maybe catered to whatever their physical needs were. They liked personalities among Christians. And so everything about them was called carnal. Carnal means things that appeal to the flesh. Now he says, even all the way back to the time that the Israelites, they left Egypt, they crossed the Red Sea, he said they were on a spiritual walk, a spiritual walk. So they ate of that spiritual food. They drank of that spiritual drink. They were built upon that spiritual rock, which is called Christ. So the theme now is spiritual. What he's saying is, he says, let him that stands take heed lest he fall. That is, your spiritual walk, he says, can fail. That's what he's saying. A spiritual walk, it can fail. So thinking back about the time of Moses, he said they had a new beginning in their spiritual walk. He calls it a baptism. And so when we think of baptism, if you're a member of the Church of Christ or if you've been around the Church of Christ, when you think of baptism, you're thinking about some water, deep water, people going into the water and getting immersed and coming back out so that they can have their sins washed away. Well, baptism means basically immersion. That's what the word baptize means. He talked about the new beginnings that the Israelites had as they went through the Red Sea. So they were immersed. They came out of Egypt. They were separated from Egypt, as he said. They were surrounded by the Red Sea and then the cloud overhead. So they were immersed. In that sense, they were immersed. And it was a new beginning. Egypt behind, promised land going forward. This is a new beginning. So we call that a benchmark. It's pivotal. That's how important baptism is for the Christian. But this isn't really a sermon about baptism. This is a sermon saying just because you become a Christian doesn't mean that you can't fall, that you cannot fall. So sometimes people emerge out of the waters of baptism and say, I'm home free. That's not true. It's not true. You need to be baptized. But just because you have been baptized, it doesn't mean that you're home free. And that's what the lesson is here. So as he talks about the possibility, it's a warning. But he says that they drank of that spiritual rock. I like to tell this story. When you ask Moses, what are you doing here? What are you all about? Moses says, well, don't you see my lanyard card right here? I'm wearing this card. It's hooked to my lanyard. And it says, you know, card-carrying member of Jesus Christ. Okay. Actually, he would have just used the word Christ. He didn't know the name Jesus yet, but he would have used the word Christ. He said, well, sure enough, that's what it says. Who's Christ? He says, well, you'll meet him in about 1,500 years. But right now, this whole walk is about what God is promising us through Jesus Christ. That's what this whole journey is about, what God is promising us through Jesus Christ. Moses was about that prophet, he said, that would arise after him. Moses was about the promised seed of Abraham that would come through Abraham's family and, of course, through David's family and then be born through that family on the land. And that's what Jesus did. Moses drank and ate and built himself upon that rock, that spiritual rock, which is Christ. That's who Moses is. Moses lived 1,500 years before Jesus, and here we live 2,100 years after Jesus, approximately. Do we build on that rock? Are we eating of that spiritual food? Are we drinking of that spiritual drink of Jesus Christ? One thing is for certain, we will not succeed if we're not. If we're not built on Christ, eating and drinking, we will not spiritually succeed. It will not happen. We can't fake it. It's not going to happen. So their failed walk with God was real. The lost Israelites are an example. So as we look there, 1 Corinthians chapter 10 and verse 6, he says, now these things became our examples to the intent that we should not lust after evil things as they also lusted. And then in verse 11, now all these things happened to them as examples, and they were written for our admonition upon whom the ends of the ages have come. Sometimes we hear what things people have done. For instance, I knew of a guy that he got his hand cut off in a factory where they were pressing metal, okay? And you're saying, well, what happened? Well, you find out the mistake that he made, and you say, don't do that. Don't do that. So, and I'm always wondering about, you know, all the safety things that are around your job place. Who was the person that was the example why they had to come up with that safety rule? It's kind of funny, but also it was tragic for somebody. It was tragic. And as we look at this and we say, okay, he's talking about tens of thousands of people perishing in the wilderness. And someone says, well, boy, that'll teach them. That'll show them. And they messed up. Actually, he said, these are examples for us. For us. He says, otherwise, you'll be among those statistics. Every one of you, he says, will be among those statistics. That you will fail in your faith. That you will not have a spiritual walk. And we need to look at those examples and be admonished. So it can happen to Christians. So look at the three examples of which he gives, and in a narrow way, he refers to three. In a broad way, he talks about all those who perished in the wilderness. We could say, 603,548 men perished in the wilderness because they didn't have faith and enter the promised land. We know that. But he gives some specific examples of this. And there were women also that did not enter the promised land. So he says in verse 7, "And do not become idolaters as were some of them. As it is written, the people sat down to eat and drink and rose up to play." So he's speaking about idolatry, where we're looking at nature itself, maybe assets, maybe, the almighty dollar. And so he says, these people, they did that. Remember when Moses went up on the mountain to speak with God as they came to Mount Sinai? Here he's gone for about 40 days. And these people said, "Where's Moses? He's not coming back." They pleaded and demanded that Aaron build them a golden calf. Then they worshiped that calf. And then God looked upon them, and God made this commentary saying, "The people sat down to eat and drink and rose up to play." So today, sometimes we think about deadbeats. This is somebody that they go to bed because they're tired. When somebody tells me they're tired, I say, "Why?" Because you can be tired for the wrong reason. You can be tired of playing all day. You've played all day and maybe stayed up way too late, and then you wake up the next day, so they eat and drink, they crash, then they rise up to do the same thing again, to play. So every day is just a repeat of the previous day. We would call that a deadbeat. He's saying that these are people that did not have their heart set on God. These are people that had their heart on personal comfort. I think of Moses being gone just a few days. Somebody was telling me about the workplace and the fact that the supervisor, if he's not on site, people don't work as hard. They don't work as hard. I was talking to an educator in East Texas a couple of weeks ago, and he said there was this one teacher, instructor, that if she even turned her back a little bit, everybody fell apart. They just fell apart. They didn't have any respect, no trust. If she left the classroom, it was going to be a zoo in there, and worse. And so he was just talking about some people are just that way. That's what we have with these Israelites. So Moses, he leaves them for a little while, just a few days. And then it says this is what they really wanted to do. They weren't serious about the journey. They weren't serious about God. They ate, they drank, then went to bed, rise up to play. That's what they were doing. Their life was about themselves. So the idolatry that was at Mount Sinai is alive and well today. Very alive and well today. So it says, what are you doing? Has nothing to do with God. I'm about, making money so I can play. Making money so I can play. And so we just keep doing that in cycles as long as it lasts. The next one of which he mentions here in 1 Corinthians chapter 10, he says in verse 8, "Nor let us commit sexual immorality as some of them did, and in one day 23,000 fell." Now that's referring, I believe, to Numbers chapter 25. That's where the Israelites were going into the promised land, and on their way, they're confronted by the Moabites. The Moabites had a king named Balak, and he says to the prophet, the priest, Balaam, he says, "Curse those Israelites. Please curse those Israelites." Well, Balaam did this. He says, "I can't curse them. God's already told me not to. Even his donkey told him not to," okay? And so, if you remember the story about the donkey, actually the donkey said, "Listen to the angel. Listen to the messenger of God." That's what he's saying. And when you read that story, what Balaam did was he said to the Moabites, he says, "This is what you do. Send your daughters out to them, entice them so that they will commit immorality with you. And if they commit immorality with you, then you've got them won over. And they will then worship your idols." So you read Numbers chapter 25, and you see that immorality taking place, and then you see the 23 or 24,000, depending on which translation you have. The point is this: that's a lot of people. That's a lot of deaths that came to the Israelites. And you're saying, wow, that many Israelites were participating in this kind of behavior? Yes, they were. They could be won over by that fleshly temptation. And because they were won over by that fleshly temptation, it said that they fell in the wilderness. 23,000 fell in the wilderness. God did not allow them to enter the promised land. Number three, you have the complainers. So we continue in 1 Corinthians chapter 10 and verse 9. He says, "Nor let us tempt Christ, as were some of them tempted, and were destroyed by serpents, nor complain, as some of them also complained, and were destroyed by the destroyer." And so first you had bitten by serpents, and then a plague that ensued as a result of that, due to the fact these people said, "We're hungry." Well, God had been feeding them every day, manna from heaven, free food every day, manna from heaven. They said, "We loathe this. We're tired of this free food." And when you think about complaining about free food, you've really taken it to a whole new level, okay? But that's where they were. They were complaining about free food. Again, they were close to being in the promised land. They were really close at that point, Numbers chapter 21. And so these people complaining, God caused serpents. They were bitten by these serpents. They would die. They would be struggling. And the Lord instructed Moses to form a brazen or brass serpent. This brass serpent was then lifted up on a pole. If the people looked at the brass serpent, then they would be healed. They would not die. And then they were able to get past the plague. And you're saying, wow, complaining. Number one, some people pride themselves on how well they complain. A Christian should never complain. Never, ever complain. And so we raise children, we tell them, God doesn't like complainers. Look at these examples. God does not like complainers. So he struck then again multitudes, thousands of people, because they were complaining that God wasn't taking care of them on their terms. So on the journey, what you see from these three examples, on the journey, you see that multiple things can happen. Things can sidetrack. I believe that he just gives three examples because he wants them to review the possibility because of those dead Israelites back in the wilderness. He wants them to see this is real. They were supposed to be on a spiritual journey, and they got sidetracked by physical issues, their idolatry, their sexual immorality, their comfort level, complaining about the food. He says they got sidetracked by carnal things. It goes back to the context of 1 Corinthians. He says the spiritual journey, you focus on eating that which is spiritual, drinking that which is spiritual, building your life on that rock which is spiritual. I said they failed to walk with God in their age. In their age. When you see the rest of it, as it says in verse 11, "Now all these things happened to them as examples, and they were written for our admonition, upon whom the ends of the ages have come." So we're at the age at the end right now. But the end could be extended. There could be another generation. There could be another generation. We don't know. He says, "And to the end of the ages," every generation after every generation after every generation. Basically, we've got just this generation. That's all we've got to walk spiritually with God so that we are built on the rock, which is Christ. So there's a way of escape. This is verses 12 and 13. "Therefore, let him who thinks he stands take heed lest he fall. No temptation has overtaken you, such as is common to man, but God is faithful, who will not allow you to be tempted beyond what you are able, but with the temptation will also make the way of escape that you may be able to bear it." So we make some points right here. Take heed. Take heed means this can happen to you. No temptation is beyond what we are able to bear. So somebody says, "I sin, but this is why." He says the why is always addressed by God in advance. Someone says, "I sin because someone else said something, someone else did something." A lot of reasons why people give for why they sinned is because of what somebody else did. And somebody says, "I sinned, I was just so hungry, I was so desperate, I was out of my mind." Somebody says, "I sinned because I don't want to be lonely, so I entered into an arrangement, a relationship which is not approved by God." And so the excuses, he says, are endless, but he says, no temptation. There's no temptation, but what if you're built on the spiritual rock of Christ, having eaten of Christ, and you drink of that spiritual drink, he says, you can stand. You can stand. So I would just make this challenge. What sin is there? Don't answer this out loud. But what sin, what temptation is there for which God has not given us a way of escape? And you think about the people that were able to endure temptations, like the Apostle Paul. We talked about him back in chapter 9. He says, I buffet my body daily. In other words, he says, I'm always conditioning myself because I don't want to be disqualified. In other words, I don't want to let circumstances get the best of me. I like the proverb that teaches a person not to become so hungry that they'll be tempted to steal. In other words, go out and work so that you can have food, because if you starve, you'll be tempted to steal. So what we're saying is that you have preventions in place. God gives us preventions. Don't window shop for sin. Don't hang out at the bar because you're going to be tempted to drink, or you're going to be tempted to do whatever other immoral things are introduced at those places. And so we call those preventions. And so here's just a few. So there's a way of escape. One is to draw near to God. In James chapter 4, the book of James chapter 4, these few verses could become a sermon within themselves, but we're using this as a support for what we're establishing, starting in verse 7. James 4, verse 7. Therefore, submit to God. Resist the devil, and he will flee from you. Draw near to God, and he will draw near to you. Cleanse your hands, you sinners, and purify your hearts, you double-minded. So he says, you do everything that you can to draw near to God, but this is something of which he says you must be proactive. When you ask people what they're doing, if they say, oh, just nothing, that's vulnerable, spiritually vulnerable. They're saying, oh, just trying to get through the day. No, he's saying you have to purposely, proactively draw near to God. Draw near to God in prayer, as we see in Matthew 6:13. The prayer of which Jesus teaches, that we ask God to lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil. To flee and resist that which is evil. 1 Timothy chapter 6. And we use 1 Timothy chapter 6 this morning. We'll use it again tonight. But he says in verse 11, but you, O man of God, flee these things and pursue righteousness, godliness, faith, love, patience, gentleness. Then he says, fight the good fight of faith. Lay hold on eternal life. So he's saying those things of which you flee, but also he's saying those things of which you pursue. If a person, and that's us, if we take this to heart and we give ourselves a positive agenda, that draws us closer to God. If we have no agenda, again, we're just on default. We become vulnerable to Satan. Turn to those who are spiritual. Mike Campus has been going through Galatians. Galatians chapter 6, the first two verses. We really need to rely on, it makes a difference if we rely on each other. Galatians chapter 6, the first two verses. He says, brethren, if a man is overtaken in any trespass, you who are spiritual, restore such a one in a spirit of gentleness, considering yourself, lest you also be tempted, bear one another's burdens, and so fulfill the law of Christ. And so when you hear of two Christians talking about their lives in respect to the blessings and the agenda of God, it makes them stronger. It's like the proverbial writer said, iron sharpeneth iron. Iron sharpeneth iron. It's just powerful. And we don't have to be biblical scholars to get this done. We're simply talking about the promises of God, the strength of our faith, and the instructions of God to overcome every obstacle. It really works. This is God's plan. It's God's gift to us. So when he says, take heed, if a man thinks he stands, take heed lest he fall, he's saying this, do everything that you can to put things in place in your life of which God gives you, and to take advantage of those things. Finally, this. When he starts that expression, he says, God is faithful. We're back in 1 Corinthians chapter 10 again. When he says in verse 13, no temptation has overtaken you except such as is common to man, but God is faithful. He will not allow you to be tempted beyond what you're able, but will with the temptation also make the way of escape that you may be able to bear it. Think about that just for a second. God did not purpose for your failure. He purposed for your success. Your spiritual victory, God purposed that. God is not going to fail us. He will not fail us. So if he says, I have sent Christ to overcome Satan, I have sent Christ to overcome Satan, and he has a victory through Christ. He did not fail. When he says that we ourselves can overcome the world, God will not fail. God is faithful. For each of us, then, we have to take heed. Let him that standeth take heed, lest he fall. And that's the sermon. I'm through preaching.